think you got good bait. Here, a little tip that I would like to relate. I said, man, the fish pie, if you got good bait, I'm going fishing.
Yeah, we're going fishing. Our bait, though, is probably going to be artificials.
That's right.
Yeah, we're not talking worms here.
Something fuzzy or foamy.
Foamy, yeah. Foamy.
Yep.
So it is time for a fishing report. Leaf is here. Hey, Leaf, how you doing, man?
Hey, not bad. It's good to see you, Deputy D. It's been too long.
I feel like I've been to a foreign planet and back since I saw you last.
Well, first you went to Planet R&B.
Yes, I did go to that.
And then had to make a stop at our moon to fix the transmission system.
Yeah, actually, I was thinking about you when I was driving up there. You and I have taken many trips together.
Oh, I love getting up there.
And you know what? The thing I like about going with you is you know every piece of the terrain that we see. You can name all the mountains, all the valleys, all the lakes, all the rivers, and that is really fun going with you.
Oh, it's so cool. Like the time we went up on the times we went up on the snowmobile too. I mean, you're not going to have to twist my arm too much.
Well, you know,
I'm down.
Well, people don't maybe know what we're talking about, but all of our transmission equipment's up on top of Mount McClure, which you cannot get to legally without a key. So not too many people get to go, but Leaf and I have been many times. And, you know, it made me think also that at the end of this fishing report, we're going to, you know, pitch what you do, lead fishing adventures out on the river and stuff.
You bet.
But I don't know anybody that, if you ever think about doing that, I don't know anybody else around here who knows any more than you do about these fishing waters. I mean, you really know these things. You grew up on this stuff.
I mean, it just comes with the territory of not only growing up here, but just being passionate about the resource and just the everything that we've got here, the beauty of this area that we have here.
Yeah, amen.
I don't want to say I would have taken it for granted as a kid, but it took maybe getting out there for a while and realizing that not everybody has such a sweet spot to call home, for sure.
Yeah, you're right. And we love the river. And even though we talk about fishing all the time, truthfully, you're a catch-and-release guy 90% of the time.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I always talk about it. I was talking, I had a interesting trip with a couple of great guys, and one of them, quite frankly, just hit me out of left field with, you know, a train of thought that I've never usually hear, because everybody's usually catch and release. This guy actually super into fly fishing, but really interested in, you know, catching and keeping food. But I think it's because, you know, there again, you kind of take it for granted when you're like a little mountain hippie growing up, and you get kind of sick of all the home harvested and raised food. But there's a lot of people out there that have that desire, just don't have the venue in their life, wherever they're at, possibly, to be able to, you know, take part in that very basic, almost like a luxury now, but it was a very, you know, primitive thing before that would, you know, keep you alive, just survival, they called it. But just to be able around here and be able to, like, you know, gather morels, or, you know, and I guess the point would be, for me, I pride myself on kind of being all over the place on things. I don't like to just do one type of fishing, mostly, you know, just fly fishing, of course, but not one type. I'll even throw some hardware, though, with some plastic worms for bass, because you just can't replicate that on your fly rod.
Yeah.
But on the same token, if there's a spot where there's an opportunity to harvest fish, and there's a need or an ability for me to store some of those fish or something, then definitely I will do that without any problem, as long as it's appropriate.
Yeah.
So.
No, I know what you mean, and I think I just wanted to let the, you know, listeners know that it's not always about harvest, though.
No, we're
open to that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the thing is, there's a lot of people who would travel into your area, fish it, and it could be an inappropriate impact on the
absolutely.
The fishery.
Yeah.
See, I mean, we look at all the fisheries around the world. I mean, you know, I think it's probably at this point in time inappropriate to maybe eat bluefin tuna.
You know, kind of an
apex predator. Yeah. I mean, if we keep doing these things, sort of impacting the food chain in, you know, inappropriate ways, we're all going to be eating jellyfish. You know?
Everybody should be very conscious of what they're doing and how they're doing it these days, for sure. Here on the Methow, I always try to point out to people even just in the way that they fish the river, to not spend all day in one spot, because on average here we have maybe 100 to 300 fish per mile a lot of the time.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, your success will lie really in targeting those areas and moving on. And you know, there's sometimes just no more there for you. Mm-hmm. And on the, you know, for the same reason, if you were to come and take some of these cutthroat that we have here, we are not supplementing this population of cutthroat. And if you know, everybody did that, it wouldn't be long at all before we didn't have any, you know. And so that's why when I'm taking fish, it's usually a place like you know, Boulder Creek or maybe Tiffany Lake, where there's just an overabundance of, a lot of the time, even some exotic species like brook trout that, mm-hmm. you know, you don't even really need one of them there. So
yeah.
Then you can feel pretty good about it. But yeah, definitely treat those native and wild fish just with care.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I don't like to get too far into the politics of the whole situation, but for those of the people around here listening to this on our radio station or whatever that live here that have gotten your ballots in the mail, I'm not going to tell you which way to go, but definitely know that our ability to access, you know, our river and a lot of these public lands hangs in the balance with this vote that's coming up for our District 2 county representative. And I'm really happy to see you know, with Ashley Thrasher and with Andy, you know, I went to school with Andy. It's great to see two really good names thrown into the ring. And so, you know, for me, if it came down to those two, it'd be a win-win, no way to lose situation. So mm-hmm. I just encourage everybody to kind of read up on what's going on and just, you know, bear in mind also, you know, the public access to public lands is a very important to all of us here. I mean, it's kind of there again. I grew up on a mountain way up Libby Creek, and so I kind of had this idea that, like, oh, well, everybody can just, you know, wing nut all over the place, do whatever you want to do, and mm-hmm. and that's just how it works, and you can walk up and down the river everywhere, right? Well, and then I get older, and I realize that a lot of these states, you can't even, you know, access the river. People's access to private lands is restricted in different yeah. places, and there aren't as many public lands in some of these states here as we have in ours. So I think we really need to protect that and mm-hmm. just, you know, be careful to keep it the way it is.
Yeah, that was an unpaid political opinion.
Yeah, well, I'm not offering any suggestions as to who you should vote for. I'm just pleased to see some new blood in there. And
what Leaf is referring to is the Shoreline Management Act.
Yes.
All of this is up yeah. in front of the county commissioners and is something that, you know, would regulate whether or not they can build fences right down to the
exactly.
water, which traditionally you'd have not been able to do. And
right.
So it would change access, absolutely. So
yeah. So not to get too far into that subject, let's
right.
get back into fishing and why we want to be able to get up and down the river.
Yes. And tell us about the river right now, because it's been
holy cow.
It's been kind of nice.
It's been awesome.
Yeah.
It's been really weird. You know, this has been a really weird season weather-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, and for a while, we've been hanging either above or right at the 60-year mark, which is kind of different for the last while for us. And because of these somewhat frequent thunderstorms, though, and the burn scarred areas, down valley mainly, we've had some not only water spiking, but we've had some debris or, you know, just some mud in the water. And it's been pretty dark, you know, a lot of the time below Beaver Creek. Although I found it still pretty fishable, it gets a little darker after Gold Creek and then a little darker again on down the valley there. But now, as far as I can tell here today as we sit, we're looking like everything is just kind of clearing up and clearing mm-hmm. up. I'm sure we're going to have more of these thunderstorms. So,
yeah.
you know, just always, you know, bounce around. Sometimes if you're fishing and there's a thunderstorm in one part of the valley, you look up mm-hmm. valley and there's sun, drive up there and fish. I mm-hmm. mean, because it just,
good
you
point.
Can literally hop around and have great opportunities all around. And that can really be kind of some active barometric pressure and making bugs pop off. Some of the bugs like drakes, mm-hmm. you know, they prefer that cloudy, rainy weather to come off. And, you know, so also for that matter, you might see the water get a little bit colored up. So I'm trying to encourage people more and more to fish more of this river.
Move around.
Fish the lower part of the river. If it's not colored up, fish the crap out of it because it's so good. The only reason I'm not down there more often is I'm busy. I'm up here. I live up here. When I lived down there on Libby Creek, I always just fished Carlton. Mm-hmm. And there's great fish as far down as the bottom of the river and up in the top ends of the river. And you have to bear in mind with those parts, they close by August 15th, and it kind of creeps in. So there's less and less fishable water for us to fish. So get out there and fish those while you can, because Chewook and the Twist close completely on the 15th, and then it closes the lower section down by Burma, comes all the way up to McFarland or something like that at the 15th, and then all the way up again to Gold Creek at the end of the month. So, you know, you before you know it, you might have missed the opportunity to fish some of these things down there. And don't think just because everybody's up here doing it up here that they're not down there too, because let's do those fish a favor. And by this time of the year, we really need to all spread out. That Winthrop to Twisp section gets hit pretty hard. And, you know, there's just great places to go otherwise. I mean, you might want to see some more of this river.
Yeah. Well, I like what you said there about the river at this point in time, late July, we're within the 60-year average.
Yeah.
I mean, anything that comes in a big, long, taken average like that, the way things have been, I'm taking that as a real good sign.
Oh, yeah, it's been great.
Yeah. So what kind of patterns have you been using? Anything different?
Well, right now we're right in the middle of one of those seasons that people love the most, the hopper season, you know, and it really kicked off within the last week or two. And at the same time, we have our summer subspecies of the golden stone popping off, which is the largest of the golden stone. And it'll go through and dovetail into the October caddis in September.
Okay.
So right now, it's just big, big bugs. And, you know, at the same time, though, I'm seeing small bugs. And just like I was doing, you know, a while ago, if I don't get them on the big bug, or if I miss them, or if they just kind of snub it, but I see they're there, then I'll follow it up with whatever I can see is out there that's small and is popping off. And right now I've been seeing a lot of drakes, and as well, I think it's a type of calabatus, although I might be mistaken. It's called Terra Narcissus, and it kind of looks like a batis, but it has like funny T-Rex front arms that hang out in front of it as it's flying through the air, and you'll kind of know it by that. And it's kind of yellowish, just like the yellow calabatus that I've been using. So I've just been staying with that pattern for that bug, and then also picked up some drakes from the outdoorsman to do the drakes. And they're like a size 14, pretty small, but you know, big in the small bug world. So
well, let me ask you, this is like maybe a little fish eating psychology or something. So like you said, there's been some big bugs hatching. You would think that a fish would, you know, take the easiest protein source available. But you said sometimes they snub them. What do you think's going on in their head there?
Well, I think quite frankly, and I was discussing this with my buddy Griff, the other guide here in town. He, you know, he's a smart guy. He's been here for a long time, and I really trust his opinion on stuff too. And we both seem to have came to a kind of the same conclusion that these fish are just plain and simple getting smarter. That's I think a byproduct of the catch and release. They're just not dumb. You know, they see the same pattern again and again. I literally had one huge cutthroat push my client's pattern around. It was a big chubby a Chernobyl ant of a kind that I use here, and it literally picked it up with its nose and pushed it around in a circle about five times. It touched that bug, and I think it just felt it finally felt the prick of that hook, and then just backed off and wouldn't come back up.
Just something was fishy and didn't go for it.
And you know, it may be that you just it didn't move right, or it didn't move at all, you know, can be a big deal. That's why I put a little bit of a twitch into my big bugs sometimes to try to fool them, put some life into it. But yeah, I feel like our fish are just kind of getting smarter, which is fine.
That's interesting.
Educated fish is a good thing, I guess, man. In some regards.
Well, you know, I like you said, when you were young, you treated things like a kid would. I really think that you and I have talked about this, that the river is you know, kind of the mother of all the things we appreciate in this valley. Something we look at, we watch, we talk about, and we really appreciate it. And the things in it as well.
Absolutely.
And so we should treat it all with, you know, respect and so on. So having fish be smarter and more difficult to catch, hey.
That's fine.
That's great. Well,
absolutely.
And here's where I pitch you the thing. If you want to take a guided fishing tour, give Leif a call.
Tell him. I can definitely help you. Like I was saying last time, whether you're a beginner or whether you're, you know, you've been doing it for quite some time. I might be able to add something for your game, or at least just show you how to fish this river more effectively. And like I say, always happy to get people started too, even if you haven't got any experience before. That's, you know, most of the folks I have are pretty new at it, and I'm always happy to get people stoked and started on it. So if you need any information on booking a trip or just need some tips, give me a call at 509-429-7298. You can email me at methowfishingadventures@gmail.com, or you can check out the blog and podcast at Fly Fishers Pro Shop. Everybody stay cool out there, be kind to one another, and get that fish right on.
With my pole, mama, and my life, I'm fishing. My mama's gonna fishing, and the baby gonna fishing too.